Hey, everybody. I am your host, Eric Mueller, and welcome back to The Eric Mueller Show, the podcast where we explore what makes any successful person's inner clock tick. Big news, everyone. Today is the drop of episode 50 of the podcast, the Big 5-0. I am incredibly excited to have reached this milestone and am sincerely grateful to each one of you for your support. In celebration of episode 50, I have a sensational interview guest lined up for you. Do you know anyone that's worked with Sir Elton John or Elon Musk, sent people down to see the wreck of the Titanic on the seabed, or even closed museums in Florence for a private dinner party and then had Andrea Bocelli serenade the guests while they ate their pasta? You do now. The real-life Wizard of Oz by Forbes and Entrepreneur magazine, Steve Sims is a best-selling author, sought-after consultant, and a speaker at a variety of networks, groups, and associations, including the Pentagon and Harvard University. Steve Sims spent 25-plus years as the Mr. Fix-It to the richest people in the world through his luxury concierge company, Bluefish. He's the author of Blue Fishing, The Art of Making Things Happen, and Gopher Stupid, The Art of Achieving Ridiculous Goals. Gopher Stupid just came out. If you want to support the book launch, I have a link tagged in these show notes for you to go in there and buy the book. Check out what Steve's doing on his website. This man is incredible, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so excited to have gotten the opportunity to interview him, and I'm really excited to share with you on episode 50, the insights that Steve Sims has. Let's head on over to the interview. All right, welcome back to The Eric Mueller Show, the podcast where we explore what makes any successful person's inner clock tick. My guest today, Steve Sims, is the visionary founder of the world's first luxury concierge, Bluefish. Now, Steve, this sounds like a very unique business. Can you give us some detail just into what your company does exactly?
Well, I'm going to have to say what it did, because obviously COVID threw a spanner in the works there. And then a couple of other things I got involved in took me away from it. But for 25 years, it was a Trojan horse. And people are probably, you know, wondering, what the hell is he on about? But for 25 years, I was well known as the Mr. Fix-It to the world's most powerful and successful people. You know, I set up things like a drum lesson with Guns N' Roses, down to see the Titanic with James Cameron, walked the white carpet with Elton John into his Oscar party, went on stage with the rock band Journey, learned to play a guitar by ZZ Top. Basically, I was the Make-A-Wish Foundation for people with very large checkbooks. And then 5 years ago, I wrote a book called Bluefish in the Art of Making Things Happen, and it just turned my world upside down. I went from being probably one of the most unknown people to all of a sudden being in demand by Forbes, CNN, and everyone else, and all asking the same stuff. Oh, who did you work for? What stories can you tell us? And I can't tell any. So I tell the stories of what I did, but you'll very, very rarely hear the names of the actual clients themselves, because quite simply, if I started naming clients, I'd be dead before the end of this podcast.
Yeah, right. And Steve, so just a little bit more on Bluefish specifically. Yeah. How did you come up with that concept? I mean, you look into the businesses like that, and there's not many out there. So it's like pretty novel.
And again, I'm not trying to evade your questions. I'll answer anything you ask, but here's the dumb thing. We're looking at each other on this podcast, but I know a lot of people are listening to it, so they don't get to see what a fine, you know, handsome gentleman I am. But to paint the picture for anyone listening to this podcast, I'm 240 pound of tattooed, bald biker. I never wanted to get, and you'll agree with that, correct?
Right.
Yeah. And it's not being rude, but I'm a big, ugly fellow. It's as simple as that. But here was the thing. When I was growing up in London and I was a biker then and I was a bricklayer, I had no money. I also never had any mentors. And we also didn't have the internet to what it does today, which is basically prove how inadequate our life is compared to someone else. But I didn't have anyone that I could listen to, learn from. We didn't have YouTube. We had none of that. But I was aggravated and I was curious. So as a young lad, I was like, hang on a minute. This can't be it. Why has he got money and I haven't? And there was a resentment. There was an anger. There was an aggravation not for violence, but for discovery. Why are you rich and I'm not? And so the funny thing is, I left my bricklaying job. I tried loads of jobs that would have surrounded myself with affluence, you know, yacht charters, jet charters, luxury cars, insurance, finance, anything around money and people. And of course, being the look that I am and not kind of finishing school, I didn't last long in any of those things. Imagine me selling insurance, knocking on your door at 8 o'clock at night going, hey, do you want to talk about insurance? I'm looking like a hitman that's trying to kind of take some money out of you. So in which case, I ended up becoming what God seemed to have built me for, a doorman of a nightclub. Now, I've noticed something funny about entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs don't have much done to them. They have a lot done for them. So when something happens to you, ask yourself the question, as shit as it is, was this done to me or was this done for me? And when I got the job as the doorman, my other fellow meatheads, they didn't want to jump in the fight. No one wants to jump in the fight. They want to kind of score a couple of girls, get paid and go home, come back the following day, do it again. Now me, I was still poor. So I still wanted to know what rich people were thinking. But all of a sudden, I've got a pedestal to humanity. All of these people are coming into these clubs, spending big money, interacting. The affluent people are talking a different language to those people pretending to be affluent. And all of a sudden, I was in school. Every night I was thinking to myself, I'm learning how people talk to each other, how they shouldn't talk to, how they approach each other, because I could see it all. So over 6 months of being a doorman of a nightclub, I then started approaching these people going, hey, you come in here a lot. Are you going to Terry's premiere party on Saturday? And a lot of the times they'll be like, no, I didn't know about it. And I'll be like, do you want to go? And they'll be like, oh, it'd be great. Thanks. I'm like, let me make a call, see if I can pull a few strings for you. And I'd go and stand at the door. And of course, I was probably working on the door for that party that weekend. So I knew I could get six people in. I'd then go back and I go, look, I made a few phone calls. I can get you in $500 each and I'll see you Saturday. And they'd be like, oh, great. And all of a sudden I realized that if they don't pay, they don't pay attention. And secondly, people aren't paying to get in. They're paying to save themselves the refusal of getting turned away. People don't like embarrassment. And the richer and more powerful you get, I've had people pay me, true story, and I'm going to slightly change a few of the little details, but there was a very famous male actor that wanted to get tickets for his family friends into his premiere, okay? And if I mention the guy to you, now bearing in mind, he was the lead actor of this movie and definitely one of the big A-listers out there. And he contacted me and he said, I need you to get a bunch of tickets. I think it was 5 or 6 tickets he needed. And I went, hang on a minute. You want me to get 5 tickets for your movie? And he went, yes. And I said, care to explain why? And he said, because if I go to the board, the people that put this movie together and that paid for the movie and invested in the movie and say, hey, I need another 6 tickets, they're going to do 2 things. They're going to give me the 6 tickets. And then they're going to hold it as a favor. So when they need a favor, they'll be like, oh, but do you remember you got the, could you come over to my son's birthday party and just say hi to his kids? And he said, I don't want the favor. He said, I want to have a transfer. I want to know I pay you. You get it done. We're done. And that was it. His own movie, he bought tickets from me, which were scalped through the freaking ass. You know, the prices he had to pay for his own movie. He was like, damn, you get paid this amount? I went, yeah. And I said, I'll be honest with you, you're getting a discount because you're buying 6. And that was it. So, I got in the ticket. So I noticed that and it just grew. And I got people into parties. Then I got people into Formula One. Then I got people into Fashion Week. And then all of a sudden I became so well known in those circles. I started working for the Grammys and the New York Fashion Week and the Kentucky Derby. And I became probably the most connected man that nobody knew for 25 years.
Yeah, that's fascinating, Stephen. I appreciate you sharing that story. And, Yeah, I mean, it just gets me thinking when I was reading all about your bio and preparing for this interview, you know, as the go-to person for arranging exclusive once-in-a-lifetime experiences like you shared in the beginning, I figured, I'm like, he's got to have quite the network of powerful connections to do that.
Yeah.
Did you notice, like, you shared this kind of the roots of when you were at that nightclub, kind of the starting, the planting of the seed there. But what really, did you notice a secret to building a network like that, Steve? I mean, because it sounds pretty primitive and straightforward hearing you explain it, to be honest.
So people are going to think that question was set up. We have not exchanged questions to be asked or answered. Okay?
We have not.
But that was a beautiful question. Understand, I didn't give a shit about the red carpets or the fancy tuxedo. I didn't care about any of those things. I wanted your attention 2 days later. You see, if I looked after you to get into something or to meet someone or to do something, I had your attention 2 days later when I'd be like, hey, Eric, did you enjoy meeting Brad Pitt or Elton John or, you know, Elon Musk? And then during that conversation of excitement, because you had a great time, I could go, oh, by the way, I've been meaning to ask you, Eric, how come you're so rich and I'm not?
Yeah.
And that was it. I was basically podcasting people back in the late 90s and the early 2000s before we had podcasts. But you see, here's the key. I used to ask, and you'll know this. Do you remember when you're 16 years old, all you want to be is rich?
Right.
Who the hell's rich? What is rich? What number is rich? It's so vague. So whenever I would meet people at the beginning, I was so raw. And I'd be like, hey, Eric, I've been meaning to ask, how come you're rich and I'm not? And they would look at me and could I go, Steve, you know, you got to work hard. Bullshit answers. Because nobody likes that question. And I was getting so much friction from that question. I very quickly realized if you don't like the answer, it's probably because you're asking the wrong question. And I thought to myself, I need a better question. So then I started saying to people, hey, I need to ask you, Eric, how come you're wealthy and I'm not? And that's a better question. Okay. That you can feel the difference in that question. But then I would get things like, well, Steve, it's because I found God. It's because I found my wife. I had kids and they made me who I am. And I'm thinking, I can't join your church and marry your wife. So this isn't helping me. And so then I changed the question for the third and thankfully last time. I would speak to people and I'd be like, hey, Eric, I've been meaning to ask you, how come you're successful and I'm not? Now, that's mindset. That's opportunity. That's culture. That was the mother load. The second I hit that third question, I got a whole load. And you asked me whether any things I noticed. There was one key thing that came up from the richest people in Korea to Los Angeles to, you know, Timbuktu to London. There was one thing that always came about from the most powerful, successful people in the planet. They can make more money, but they can't make more time. But they can decide what they do with that time. And so a lot of them, when you speak to people, and I've had conversations with Elon Musk, Richard Branson. I could name drop to bore the shit out of you. I probably already have. But I would speak to some of these people and they'd be like, so what are you working on, Steve? Why are you working on that? How is that working for you? What's the impact going to be? How many people are you going to impact? How many people are you going to employ? What's your scale? What's your distribution? It was like being interviewed. And I'd be like, sometimes I've had conversations and I've had to step outside and just had to kind of like breathe for a second, because they don't care what you watched on Netflix. They don't care what you're having for dinner that night. They care about what impact you are generating and possibly can they help with that. So they're always focused on the impact. A great example of this, beautiful example that sadly you don't see much on the news. Did you know during the two fiscal years of COVID, and we're just in our third one now, but in the two fiscal years of COVID, more millionaires were registered than at any other point of time. Time. Not just in the last 20 years, of time. Now you think about the economic booms that we've had. You think about the dot-com. You think about the crypto boom. You think about the real estate boom, the stock market booms. Now, yes, there's been depressions after that, but we're on about COVID, the only pandemic any of us have ever had, ever. The 2 years where you can't go out, you can't earn a living, I can't drive anywhere. More people woke up and went, hang on, was this done for me or to me? Ah, it was done for me, used it, and became millionaires out of it.
Yeah, that opportunity. And when you're speaking to that point, Steve, it made me think of, you can read this on your website, those of you listening, I'll tag it, but when you were talking with Elon Musk and touring SpaceX, it was to focus on the problem first, not the solution. Yeah. That really hit me when I read that. I was like, that's it. That's really like a crucial thing to think about when you're trying to craft a business or you know, crafting that solution. You got to think about what problem's there first.
Yeah, it was to go into a little bit more. Elon, I was with Elon Musk at SpaceX, and someone was saying to him that, you know, there was some problem with something, and he would always insist and never come to me with a problem, come to me with a solution. And even if the solution's shit, at least it shows that you've tried to answer the problem rather than just pass it along. And so people would come in there and say, hey, there's a problem here, but I'm thinking we can do this, this, or this. What would you suggest? And they're coming along with solutions. And he would always turn around and go, well, before we look at the solution, why does the problem exist? And he had that with cars. You know, we're looking at a friction-based object. An engine is based on an explosion, friction, and wear and tear. In any explanation, it's a foiled invention. And so he turned around and he said, why should we repair the engine? Why don't we remove it? Why don't we use things that have no friction? Why don't we use magnetic force that doesn't touch? Therefore, it can't wear out. You don't need to replace it because there's no wear and tear in it. So he always focuses on, hey, before we look at a solution, why is the problem there to start with?
Yeah, I just think that's really profound. And this also got me thinking, Steve, kind of a sillier example, but maybe somebody listening will resonate with it. Like, let's say someone listening, you know, knows your story, knows what Bluefish did, and they're a massive fan of Steph Curry, you know, just won another NBA championship. And they're thinking like, I want to have a one-on-one conversation with Steph. I want to network with my idol. You know, they aren't famous. They maybe only have a couple friends in the Bay Area who are also not famous. Like, is it even possible for this person to set up a call with Steph, Steve? I mean, you've made the impossible possible through your business. So like, you've done this, but what advice, if any, can we offer this listener? Like, where do they start? What is the first step?
See, here's the dumb thing. And you've just done a great demonstration of a bad mindset. So many people come up with a concept that they want, and then we'll spend the next 10 minutes telling you why it's not possible. Not waiting for you to say anything, just like a guy wants to have a one-on-one with Steph Curry, but he's poor. He's not famous. Even his mates are shit. You know, you went into a complete dialogue on how it couldn't be done, and you spent longer telling me why it couldn't be done than really focusing on why it should be done. You see, here's the thing. You want to meet Steph Curry. Guarantee you, he knows that. The second you walk towards him and you're all eyeballed and you've got your camera out, whatever, he knows you want to meet him. That's the wrong journey. What needs to happen for Steph Curry to want to have a conversation with you? That's how you start it. And that's how I know I want something, but I've got to get in your underwear and try and work out what needs to happen to make you want to talk to me. Now, is it you want to release a book? Is it because you have got a charity that you're involved in? You know, I knew a guy that was a painter, and he wasn't famous, but he was a very good painter. And he was a painter, you know, he did artwork and he did some local little stuff and he did some murals on wall. And he wanted to get in touch with this person. And this person was opening up a school. And he said, look, I know you're opening up a school. I'm an artist. I would love to paint all the kids' first day on this wall so they will be there forever as the first kids of that wall. Would that be a benefit to you? And of course, the celebrity was like, Absolutely. He took his talent to benefit the other person, to make them want to have them in the conversation. If you want to meet Steph Curry, what needs to happen for Steph Curry to want to have the conversation with you? What is he involved in that you can help? What skill do you have that either he doesn't have the time for or he doesn't have the talent for that you can do, that in you being part of his circle would aid his cause? That's how you get that done. Anyone can meet Steph Curry. Absolutely anyone. You've just got to think, why should he?
Yeah, and Steve, I love it. Perfect segue into what you're quoted as saying, that there is no one out there that can't do what I've done. You say that on your website, you know, for your distillery. Yeah, exactly. That, I love that mindset. It was very inspirational to hear that. And if someone is listening and wants to learn how to provide value, because I believe that's probably really what started with you providing value to those high profile individuals.
Yes.
You know, is there a way for people to think what they're good at? I mean, are we looking at a blend of a passion and a skill set, or, you know, is there something you could do outside of your day job?
Well, passion only gets you so far. You know, there's always these kind of like, oh, if you're not passionate about it, hey, I'm passionate about a ton of things that I can't do. yeah. So that doesn't freaking help. The obvious thing in order to you get forward is to go on to Amazon and pick up a copy of Blue Fishing, The Art of Making Things Happen. It's my book and I'll make a dollar if you buy it. So you're not going to be buying a beach house with it, but that may help you. I think what you've got to do is really focus on what it is you have, and then is your goal strong enough? See, a lot of people in that conversation you just mentioned about Steph Curry, hey, I'd like to meet Steph Curry is very different to I must meet Steph Curry. So first of all, how focused is your goalpost? You know, and then work in reverse from their eyeballs.
Yeah, I think the focus, I really think that's how I relate to my own journey even, is like there's certain things that I think about, and those of you listening probably can resonate. You think into the future. What is your duty? Like if success, I'm a big Grant Cardone fan as well. And his big principle is success is your duty. And it's not just this is nice to have. So if you want to provide for your family and, you know, create something meaningful, you have to have that mindset. So I think that's really inspirational there, Steve. I appreciate that.
I'm glad. Look, let's break it down. I'm not here to be inspirational. You know, I don't care if you dance around like a member from the Ellen squad or something. I'm not here to razz you up and make you clap like an idiot. I'm here to show you that a bricklayer from London has done this. And I'm there to challenge and poke you to go, hey, if you want to be able to do this, I'm here to show you you're already out of excuses. And if that inspires people to go out and do more, then I'm just selfishly helping create a world that I'm quite happy to live in.
Yeah. And to that point, so if someone is listening and wants to start a company, they want to venture out and really dive into entrepreneurship, would there be one specific thing that you'd want them to know before starting, Steve, aside from just the fact that you're out of excuses and you can do this?
Yeah. Understand that the first time you do anything is going to be shit. You got to understand that. I'm telling you here and now, and I'm not calling out Eric here, but he's going to agree with me. I know he's going to. The first time you ever did a podcast, I bet you it was crap compared to the podcasts you're doing now. Yes or no?
Yeah, I actually forgot to turn on my main mic. I was using a headset and the mic on the headset. Yeah, so I mean, perfect example. The interview content was so fun, but yeah, the quality, it was not good.
No. The first time we do anything as an entrepreneur, a lot of people will paralyze themselves with a PowerPoint. You know, I've got a plan ahead. You can't plan for shit. You know, I personally will wire you $1 million if someone can send me a business plan in 2018 that says, hey, we're going to have a tremendous year. Then we're going to get shut down because, oh, by the way, there's going to be this pandemic that comes over from Asia. No one knows what's going to happen, and it's still going to be kicking around in 2023.
Yeah.
You show me a business plan that says that, I'll wire you my house and my kids. You see, a PowerPoint and a business plan only gets so far, but momentum and action gets everywhere. So you want to do something? Baby step, baby. Try it. You know, if you are sitting there going, hey, I'm going to do a business and I'm going to provide wigs for poodles, I'm really passionate about poodles and I'm a great wig maker. I'm going to do pigs. I'm going to do I'm going to do wigs for poodles. Okay. Just go on Facebook and go, hey, has anyone ever wanted to buy a wig for a poodle? And see if anyone answers. And if 10 people answer and go, do you know, it's funny you should say that. I've always wanted to get a wig on my poodle. Then you got 10 clients and then you got a business. If no one answers, then you haven't got a business. You see, a business isn't a business unless you've got a customer. I'm not about your best mate that's pity paying. I'm not about a customer that you've now just solved that problem. So there's so many different ways you can try stuff today. But understand the first time you try anything, it will be shit. You've just got to continue with that momentum. And as a good friend of mine, Avi Mizell, used to say, get going and then focus on getting good.
Yeah, it's a great example with anything creative too, is you have to, and athletically, I mean, you have to be comfortable with not being good initially, because who's great at the start, and really what would it mean to be great if everybody was good at the beginning? Like, it would totally diminish any sort of hard work and perseverance towards becoming the best in the world at something.
Have you ever read up on or listened to any of the interviews with Kobe Bryant?
Yeah.
Kobe Bryant used to say that I was an average basketball player, but I was an A-plus hard worker. And I was the first person on the court for practice, and I'll be the last one to go home. And I worked my way higher. But I started as an average player. So you got to do that. You got to put the work in.
Yeah, and Steve, you mentioned your book, The Art of Making Things Happen, The Blue Fishing,
yep,
which you also have a podcast on that same thread.
Yep.
So I encourage you guys listening to check all that out. Did you find that when you were writing that book, as you were finally diving into how you did those made those impossible things possible for your clients, did you find yourself almost being amazed by what you were able to accomplish, looking back and thinking just in how it started? I mean, I would think you'd look back and think, wow, I'm a little shocked that we were able to pull that off. Did you ever feel that way?
There were many a night. The way that it works is I had a ghostwriter. And so okay. My ghostwriter would literally interview me in my garage. I'd be working on one of my motorbikes and we would just chat for like an hour and a half. And then she would write that up and send it to me. And so I would read it and then I'd be like, crap. So I wasn't aware that I did this. And then I did, because you move with instinct. And of course, the better you get and the more things you accomplish, you become ignorant to getting a no. And you suddenly go, hang on a minute, I really did do that with the Pope. And you sit there and scratch your head and go, how the hell did I get away with that? And I got away with it because I didn't visualize it going any other way than I perceived. I was just dead on, you know, like a kid just keeps on walking until you grab him. You know, I was that kid. I was the curious 5-year-old that went, oh, I want to do this. I was just gone. And before you knew it, I was coming back because I'd done it. And they'd be like, how did you do that? And I'd be like, do you know, I don't really know, you know, but I did. So the book very, very often kind of got me nervous. In fact, this year, and that was 5 years ago this year, year in October, we actually launched our second book, Go for Stupid, The Art of Setting Ridiculous Goals and Then Achieving Them. And we're focusing on the ridiculous, stupid goals that people laughed at that then became integral in the way that we live today. How many times are you aware that Elon Musk was scorned in PayPal? The banks hated him. When he started the cars, Ford would have a go at him, even though he ended up buying some of our plants to build the Teslas in. And how, when he started the rockets, NASA would publicly ridicule him, saying there was no room in space for an amateur. That's what NASA used to say. And who is Elon's partner now?
NASA.
Now, let's look at that word partner. There's a bloody great rocket. How much of that rocket did NASA have anything to do with?
Not much.
They put the sticker on the bloody thing.
Yeah.
NASA, in its partnership, is now a decal. It's an advertiser. It's like buying a banner at Formula One and then trying to say that you're partnered with it. That's what NASA's role is in space exploration now. It's following the curtails of someone that they openly slandered.
That's crazy. I mean, and to think too, it's got to be like a, you don't want to have an I told you so mindset either. I mean, so it's still like to accomplish it together, working together and being a partner, it makes sense, right? I mean, it's.
Oh my God. If I was Elon and I got NASA after 5 years come to me, they would certainly be getting a much more colorful response from me than they did from Elon. I'd tell them where to take a hike, but hey, that's why Elon's Elon and it's not me.
Right. Right. And Steve, so, you know, just briefly, this podcast really explores success. And so you obviously have had a ton of entrepreneurial success. Congratulations on your second book coming up this fall. You do have some NFTs, I think, that were maybe available for some exclusive opportunities.
They were. They've closed up now.
Yep. That's really exciting. Look forward to that book. But I want to ask you, and maybe it's changed over time, you can touch on that too, but what is your definition of success right now? What is that word? When someone says success, what does it mean to Steve Sims?
I want to know I've earned the day. I want to know I've earned the day, not only by making impact to my family, but challenging myself to develop. You see, Joe Polish actually came out with a statement once. He said, the definition of hell is to meet the man or woman that you could have been.
Ooh.
So success for me is to know that my family are safe, for my family to know that they are loved and protected, but for them to all know that I'm going to push myself there a little bit more every single day. I'm 55 years old today. And if I didn't do any more, I'd still be living up in the hills with all my dogs, beautiful land, beautiful motorcycles, and I would be irritated. So I have to try something different.
And have you noticed, too, that there's a certain driving force that keeps your inner clock ticking towards success? You touched on family. Is that the main driver for you, Steve? Was it different when you started? How has that, you know, affected your journey?
It's always different. You see, funny enough, the goalposts always change name and color and distance. You know, when you're a young lad, you know, you want to be rich and you want to buy a Ferrari, and then you make enough money to buy a Ferrari and you don't want to buy a Ferrari, you want to buy a yacht. So the toy changes. There was a time when I wanted all of these things and all of these fancy watches and these fancy cars, and I want none of that. I want experiences. I want feelings and I want reactions. So I love, like, here's an example I do that I urge everyone to do. I have it, and there's no money in it. I have a Facebook group called An Entrepreneur's Advantage with Steve Sims. It's a free Facebook group. And starting in 2023, I'm going to prison. Now, before COVID, I used to go to prison 3 times a year just outside of Los Angeles to a level 4 maximum security prison, where we would take a whole bunch of entrepreneurs to Shark Tank with inmates at a prison, and we would talk to them on how they can take their illegal entrepreneurship hustle and skills to a productive legal manner. And we would have these conversations, and we would literally be locked up in the prison for about 8 hours. And that pushes you. That challenges. If you're scared about doing a podcast or leading the Monday morning meeting, come and hang out with me in prison for a day. You'll never worry about that shit ever again. But I look at now, at who am I impacting? I know I'm impacting the inmates. I know those inmates are impacting me. And I'm also bringing people in that changes their life, their perspective. If you want to realize how wealthy you are, go where people are not wealthy. And then you'll quickly realize just how damn billionaire-ish you are.
Yeah, the power of perspective. I think of that often, really, just how good you have it. And I think it's helpful in that way, too, as an entrepreneur and someone that's wanting to build things, to just be humble with the process. Know that it takes time. Like you had mentioned, you're going to have to be shitty at it for a minute before you start to improve. And one piece that I started to look at with this podcast, too, Steve, was really what makes up someone's success portfolio. So I'm big into finance and investing. You know, I'm still relatively early in my career, so I don't have a ton of capital to do that with, but it's a passion of mine. And so I really wanted to discover how successful people, you know, invest in themselves, so to speak, and build the foundation for their success. You know, portfolio and finance, it's your investments that build up the foundation, lay the framework for your goals. Are there specific skills and traits that you've noticed within yourself that make up your own success portfolio and that, you know, accumulate a fair amount of shares, so to speak, of what really drives you to keep striving for it?
Yeah, Great questions, by the way. These are really good questions. So the first thing is, it was a friend of mine, Peter Diamandis, that actually introduced me to this concept. I never listened to the news before 12 o'clock. Okay, I listened to the radio. I listened to, you know, music being played, but I never watched the news before 12 o'clock. And to be honest with you, by the time 12 o'clock comes around, I very rarely, and so maybe at 6 o'clock at night, if something earth-shattering is going to happen, someone's going to text me. All right, yeah. I'm going to find out about it. But I don't want to wake up in the morning with my eyes stirring. I look at my beautiful wife. I look at my dogs. I look at my kids. I throw the doors open to my garden. I step out with my coffee. And then I spend 2 hours watching the news, which is going to depress the shit out of me. The last 5 minutes, they're going to show me how a dog was operated on and now it can see again, and expect that 5 minutes to repair the last hour and 50 of negativity. I'm in such a slump that I've got to spend the next few hours getting back up into a positive mindset. Don't start that way becoming handicapped. So the first thing I don't do is I don't watch the news. I wake up every morning ignorant to the fact that it's anything other than wonderful. Okay. And I lead my way. Do you know, funny enough, when you do that, usually is, you know,
yeah,
so there's all this good stuff. So that's the first thing I do. The second thing I do, which will make you laugh, is entrepreneurs need to understand what that crap at. A good entrepreneur very quickly realizes what is his unicorn and what is he shit at. And what he's shit at, leave it alone. There was Dan Sullivan that said that when you start focusing on your weaknesses, you end up with some really strong weaknesses. So when you're bad at something, find someone that's good at it. Now, my wife, we've been together 30-something years. She's really good with finance. I'm really, 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 really shit. And this is what happens. I'd wake up in the morning. I used to do this. We used to live in Switzerland. And I'd look at my bank account. The first thing I'd do in the morning, pour my coffee, look at my bank account to see if invoices had been paid and monies had been wired in. And I would look at loads and loads of zeros and big numbers. And I'd sit there with my coffee and I'd be like, oh, yeah, baby, I'm big shit. And do you know what I do for the next 2 months? Nothing. Because I had so much money, I would coast. And then my wife would tap me on the shoulder and go, babe, we're heading to no money. And then you go, oh, shit. And you start hustling. And when you hustle, you get in bed with the wrong people. You get into deals that you shouldn't be taking. So I realized that money was a horrible bellwether to me. I was reacting to my bank account. It was the tail that wags the dog. So we turned around and we realized this. My wife actually realized it. And we went, okay, here's the deal. And this is hand on heart. Not a clue how much money I got in my bank account. But I know I've got 43 grand available to me on my credit card. Okay? I can go anywhere in the planet. I can be stuck. I can get a flight. I can get into a hospital. I can do anything I need to do. I can buy a small car. I've got 43 grand. And I know it's 43 grand. My credit limit, I think, is 60. And I've been spending a few bits and Clara paid up. But I know my credit card. And so in that case, I respond to people, not their checkbook. I take deals on from people that I want to relate to, not because they're paying me a number. My wife will invoice them. My wife will tell me when they paid, and I will then get in a bed and do the work for them. But I don't react to money. I react to the person.
Yeah, I think that's a great mindset to have too, and not coast is what you know, you hit on there. Because I think that's probably pretty easy to do once you've started to amass some success.
Yeah.
To sit back and think, oh yeah, I'm the man or woman, and I'm doing my thing, and I don't need to continue to try that hard anymore. And then boom, you get hit with it. And yeah, so I think, Steve, I think that's really profound too. And I do have one last question for you, and I definitely want to be respectful of your time, get you off here, but it doesn't take much to look at your website and see you pictured side by side with these remarkable celebrities, Musk, Elton John, John Travolta, you know, just name a couple of them. Who is the most fascinating person that you've encountered so far in your life?
Wow. God, where could you start? Do you know, I would be rude if I said the number one. So let me just give you one that always fascinated me. Magic Johnson.
All right. Yeah.
Really. I love his story. I love how he grew his business. how he looked at being a business outside of being a sportsman. I was really impressed with Magic Johnson and also Jean-Paul DeJuria. Absolutely love his mindset. Anyone that doesn't know him, he's the man behind Paul Mitchell and Patron, Tequila, you know, and so many other things. But those two people, I know everyone expects me to go, oh, Elon Musk, the Pope, you know. I would say straight off the bat is those two.
All right. Yeah, I mean, that's. I think that's, everybody knows who Magic Johnson is for sure, and everybody knows Paul Mitchell and whatnot there. So I think great examples. And for those people listening that want to reach out and want to know more, want to connect with you, you got go on your website and check out all the various, you know, coaching materials and your books, and there's a lot of different things that they could get involved in from a paid standpoint. If someone wants to just reach out and shoot you a question, is there a best way to get in contact with you, Steve?
Yeah, and I've already given it to you, an Entrepreneur's Advantage with Steve Sims, and we get a lot of it. I tell people, you see, here's the daft thing. The question you have, so does someone else. So when I'm answering your question, I'm helping five other people that are watching the conversation. So I urge my people, get into an Entrepreneur's Advantage with Steve Sims, ask the question, I'll answer it, and other people can get involved in it or actually benefit from the answers and the conversation going and the dialogue.
Perfect. Yeah. To join that Facebook group, I'll tag all that in the show notes. Steve Sims, can't thank you enough for being on the Eric Mueller Show, man. This has been so much fun. Yeah, I'll say it again that you are very inspirational. So I appreciate that. But I also appreciate the no BS and just the, you know, the attitude of you got to put in the work and success will come. But you also got to be ready to suck for a bit. So can't thank you enough,
great
Steve.
Great questions. Yeah, great question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Take care.
Bye.